host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to Alchemy. Today we have a very special guest. I'd like to welcome the one and only titan of business, Christy Heffner. Christy, it's so awesome having you on the show.
Well, thank you very much. I am rarely referred to as a titan.
You absolutely are. So, Christy, we're so excited, to have you come on today. And, you have had such an amazing and such a groundbreaking career. You're an activist. Obviously many folks know you for your role as chairman and CEO of Playboy Enterprises, which you served from 1988 to 2009. And, you were widely credited with developing and leading the repositioning of the company from its legacy domestic magazine business to a global multimedia and lifestyle company. And you're also the chairman of the board for Hatch Beauty. And you're also on the board of directors for Fila. So you've been very busy.
I've been fortunate in being able to have an interesting new chapter post my tenure at Playboy Enterprises, made up of getting to work with a number of exciting disruptive companies, including Philo, that are having an impact and allow me to both contribute and to continue to learn.
I love it. So Christy, talk to us a little bit about, how did you get involved with Philo? How did you meet Chad? What's the story there?
We knew some people in common. I had been advising the actor Jim Belushi. He is a cannabis grower in Oregon.
Christy, we've had Jim on the show as well.
Great. Well, then your listeners know that he is serious about both the plant and the farming of the plant and also the health benefits of the plant, believing that his brother John might very well be alive today if instead of taking opioids for chronic pain and depression, he had taken cannabis-related products. And so I knew Jim just through Chicago, and as he was starting to move from being a farmer to building a portfolio of brands in the cannabis space, I was helping him. Mm-hmm. And I think Chad knew of me, and so he asked someone who knew both of us to make the introduction as he was thinking about building his board, and that's how we met.
I love it. You've been amazing to have on the board, and really appreciate everything that you've done. You were recently on a Fox News show and really talking about, Philo and talking about how cannabis is, entering the mainstream world. So I think it'd be great just to hear from you, as you sit on many boards and you built companies before, to, talk to us about the need and the opportunity that cannabis is currently presenting, to the traditional brand world in the mainstream sector.
Sure. I think as it's the case with other kind of public policy related matters, it can seem to take a very long time to affect social change, whether that's public opinion or the legal framework. And yet when it starts to happen, it just seems to accelerate at an amazing rate. And that's the way I would think about the arc of the changes with regard to cannabis. So going back to the 70s and 80s, when I was at Playboy Enterprises, the foundation was very supportive of the National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws, and then later the Drug Policy Alliance, and really editorialized on behalf of ending the ill-conceived war on drugs and thinking about drug issues as health-related issues. And it seemed like for a very long time, we really weren't making any progress at all. But then when you look at the last few years and the dramatic increase in legalization, not just of medical use, but of adult use, and you think about the likelihood of what will happen on the federal level, it's been just a significant change. And I think that's created the backdrop for both companies like Philo that want to develop products and services in the industry, but also for companies like the clients of Philo, who now find it perfectly reasonable to want to better understand cannabis and CBD consumers?
So, you know, when you're thinking about perceptions in the space, I think, you know, the last year has been, it's been instrumental for cannabis in general, right? So you have, you know, massive legalization that's happened. You have a lot of people that were, you know, trying products. Obviously, there was a global pandemic taking place, so a lot of people were stressed and couldn't sleep. But do you think that it is the perception change around consumers that have shifted so much? Is it because of legalization, or is it because of a kind of a national acceptance now that's taken so long? Like, what do you think it really was this past year that moved the needle?
I think it's kind of a flywheel effect. So I think that public opinion is what drove legalization. But as legalization has increased state by state, that impacts public opinion. Mm-hmm. As people see that you can have a properly regulated industry in the cannabis space, and that the litany of horribles that the opponents would point to didn't happen, that then increases the popularity for further legalization. I think also contributing was just the really devastating awareness of the opioid crisis. Sure. And the cost, the human and financial cost of that, and the desire to look for better solutions for those underlying problems, whether it's, you know, chronic pain, or as you say, in the context of the pandemic, Jeff, you know, sleep and stress issues, or even, you know, brain trauma and PTSD issues. So I think that's a contributor. But I also think there's a broader change that's been going on that I've seen through the lens of different companies I work with. And that is just a permanent shift towards a different way of thinking about health, and that health is more than just the absence of illness. It's about living your best life, feeling your best. It encompasses wellness, and it certainly moves beyond traditional Western medicine. And I think all those factors combined.
Perfect. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think from a mainstream marketer's perspective, a lot of them are starting to kind of, you know, take a peek into, you know, the maturing cannabis industry and say, how could I be part of that? So I'm curious, you know, from your lens, obviously the companies that you work with, you know, how can marketers really tap into that growing cannabis demographic?
Well, I think as our tools for targeted marketing have advanced in, you know, each generation, from, you know, I was on the board of the Direct Marketing Association when I was very young. And, you know, at that point, that was the form of targeted marketing.
Right.
And, you know, then as the internet developed in the 90s, the ability to, you know, reach people through that. And then, of course, mobile gave the ability of even greater, you know, kind of personalization, that anything that is kind of predicated on identifying cohorts of potential consumers, either for new customers or for retention, is going to benefit from having access to new cohorts of consumers. And with the, you know, relatively recently liberalized and legalized cannabis industry in so many states, that just opens up a really interesting new set of data for clients, whether they're, you know, Uber or Bacardi.
Right, and exactly.
I think it's clearly way past any stigma associated with, you know, who are the people that are buying cannabis products. I think there's ample, you know, evidence and research out there that it's actually a wide range of ages, and it's both genders, and it's multiple ethnicities, and it's for a variety of uses and needs. And so that creates a richness of the consumer information and data that is obviously of significant value to consumer-facing companies.
Exactly. And I think, you know, you answered my next question, which is great because you nailed it there. But I think there's a lot of folks out there who kind of, they associate cannabis with, oh yeah, that's somebody who's lazy and is a stoner, right? And we know that's not the case. We know that it consists of so many different demographics of people, executives, right? People who work in healthcare, people who work in real estate, people who are moms and dads, and everybody's utilizing cannabis in a different way, right? Whether it's CBD for recovery and wellness and sleep, or if it's, you know, THC for sleep or kind of, you know, letting your hair down and relaxing, right? So many different quadrants that are really developing. So I think that's one of the most important things out there, right? It's like, it's not the stoner mentality. It is really, it makes up a large part of our entire country.
Yes, and I think the reality is because of the limitations of being a Schedule I drug on research, we really have just scratched the surface on what the potential benefits of the plant are.
What verticals and industries do you think would actually benefit the most from actually targeting cannabis consumers? Is it retail? Is it sports and fitness? Is it recreational beverage consumption? Like, what do you think is the best possible benefit there?
I'm hard pressed to think of one, to be honest, that wouldn't benefit.
Right.
You know, it's as I say, it's such a diverse and large audience that whether you're, you know, in financial services or you're in hospitality, you know, whether you're in food and beverage or you're in gaming, you know, if you're consumer facing, I would imagine that there are substratas of the, you know, cannabis CBD consumer base that would cross-reference in a powerful way with what you're looking to target.
From a legalization perspective, you know, it's been all over the press, you know, for the last few weeks. New York, New Jersey, right, now is legal. What do you think as far as, you know, the tri-state area from a revenue implications perspective? Obviously, New York is massive when it comes to market. You know, people are talking about New York being bigger than California when it comes to revenue from cannabis. Like, what are your thoughts around the business side of that?
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about, as a driver for change, the, you know, one could say without hyperbole, dire need that virtually all states have for increased revenues coming out of, you know, first the recession that we really were just recovering from, and then the economic and health costs of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So the potential tax revenue side of the continuing legalization, it's obviously huge, and you see it every time, you know, new numbers are reported in, you know, let's say Illinois, where you know I live, and which is still relatively young in its you know adult use legalization. So there's that piece of the you know kind of financial picture, and then there's the, to your point, sort of the industry size. And you know, there are, even though because of the need for further reform on the federal side, you know, we don't have U.S. listed cannabis companies that are, you know, flower touching, and we don't have U.S. based banks that are doing listings. There's a lot of coverage of the industry already by investment banks and by law firms. And you know, the projections are significant. I can't think of another industry that has the growth trajectory that is realistically and legitimately forecast over the next 5 to 10 years than the cannabis industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you brought up Illinois, Oregon also, you know, posting record cannabis sales in April alone. And yesterday, you know, there's an article in the New York Post that colleges in New York are now increasing cannabis-related courses, you know, amid legalization. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, universities are now adding cannabis to the syllabus as they start to prepare students for this growing industry. So it's kind of, it's pretty amazing to see everything that's unfolding, you know, this year. You know, any thoughts as far as, you know, what can further increase the velocity and growth within the sector?
Well, I think we need some federal reform. I think getting it off Schedule One, allowing for banking, you know, I think those would be very big drivers. Those would seem to me to be the most significant, because I think the state by state is going to continue. But we need to make the interstate and the banking side of the industry much easier than it is today.
Absolutely. I feel like that is one area that will really, you know, give the industry the explosion that it needs, right? Taking credit card payments and all of those things that we take for granted, right?
Right.
Good stuff. Well, Christy, this has been really great insight. And of course, always value your thoughts and opinions. And, you know, if you listen to the show before, we always kind of talk a little bit about business in the beginning. And then we, you know, end the show with some rapid fire questions. Really easy. Don't worry. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. All right. So first question, when you're not working, how do you like to spend your time?
If I can, hiking, if I can be outdoors and the weather permits, I guess I would say hiking.
Okay.
If I can't, then reading or listening to music.
Nice. Do you have a favorite word?
I don't know if it's the favorite, but one word I'm very fond of that I think of as kind of a watchword for me is agility.
Agility.
Yeah. I work hard at being agile mm-hmm. in what I do in my business life and in my intellectual approach to things, to not get kind of locked in. It's also not a bad word if you're thinking about health and wellness. Just keeping yourself agile is a pretty good path to living longer and younger.
Yes, I just wrote it down. I need to be more agile with fitness. My desk all day on calls, you know, it's tough.
Yes, you have to fight that.
What was the best thing that happened to you last week?
So my mother and her husband just relocated from the suburbs where they lived in a three-story townhouse to an apartment in the city. And so that involved, as it always does, deciding what things you definitely want to move and what things you just don't really need anymore because you're downsizing your space. And my mother had played the violin when she was a young girl, and she had kept her violin all these, you know, 80 years.
Wow.
And so I took it. I found two brothers who collect, restore violins and then rent them to... I have a free rental program for students who can't afford their own violins and who teach that are downtown. And I took it to them without any sense of, you know, whether it could really be restored or it was really not worth anything. And the gentleman I went to see, Stefan Hirsch, said to me, this is actually, I said, I know it's not a valuable violin, because my mother's father was a streetcar conductor. They were people of simple means. And he said, this is actually a well-made violin,
cool.
Probably around 1870, probably Bohemian, and it can be restored. And we would be happy to do that at our expense so that it can be played again.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's a great story. So last question, and I wanted to ask this because I'm a huge foodie. But I was curious, like, what's your favorite meal?
That is really hard. I have not eaten meat since 1975. I eat chicken and fish and seafood, so I'm not a vegetarian. But I love so many kinds of ethnic cuisines. And I feel so grateful to live in a city that is so multicultural and that has so many neighborhoods with, you know, wonderful restaurants that are, you know, Indian or Thai or Greek or Mexican or whatever. So, you know, or Japanese. So it's hard for me to pick one meal.
Yeah.
What I would say, maybe because we do live in a city that has all four seasons, is for me, one of the great food treats is to shop the Green Market all summer long and to cook with all fresh, you know, kind of fresh produce ingredients.
Love that. Awesome. Well, I'm getting, you know, thoughts in my head about what I'm going to make for dinner tonight.
There you go.
Well, this was great, Chrissy. It was great to have you on the show. And of course, thank you for everything that you've done. And, you know, thanks for your insight. And yeah, it's just fantastic having you on here. So thank you again, Chrissy Heffner. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.